Everyone, welcome to minute 160 of season 8 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we FUBAR our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Chris Henry of the Apollo 13 Minute. Welcome back to the show this season, Chris.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This is truly an honor, and I say that a lot, but I really mean it when we're talking about this movie. This movie is just so special.
Well, I saved these episodes for you, so we'll see.
Yeah, actually, they're as someone who works in an aviation museum and works with World War II veterans, these episodes these specific clips, they're just so special to, I think, to anybody who works around not just World War II veterans but veterans of any generation.
Right, that makes a lot of sense. I will not contradict you on that. Definitely makes sense. All right, so minute 160 begins with old Ryan talking to the gravestone or the grave marker, and ends with James's wife trying to get a clue. So we ended things yesterday with the here we have the morphed Ryan, from Matt Damon to Harrison Young, and he's standing by this grave marker. So actually, before we get into all this, Chris, why don't you tell everyone and me what's your background with this movie? Do you remember when you first saw it? Do you remember do you watch it often? Is it I don't know, whatever you want to say about your experiences with watching the movie.
Absolutely. I had probably a unique viewing of this movie. My grandfather and I went and saw it in the theater together. And my grandfather fought in World War II, but in a much different way than I think a lot of people thought. He was part of the Italian underground. So he was a young kid in Italy during the war and was actually smuggling out down the Allied flyers. They were hiding them in his their vineyards. In their basements, things like that, and trying to get people, Allied flyers to back across enemy lines, into friendly lines. So it was pretty wild and kind of surreal at the time. I didn't realize how special watching this with my grandfather of that age, would be. It certainly touched him a lot. And then as I grew into my museum, I was always interested in military history and aviation history. But it was really, it was really this movie that sort of sparked my interest. I was always interested in the aviation side of it, but I really started to appreciate the ground war and what those guys went through, the GIs and the landings on the beaches. Shortly after this, the miniseries Band of Brothers came out, and that was another one that really entrenched that appreciation for all the who served during World War II. But that is my viewing of the movie. I love the movie. There are times where I will just go and pull certain clips. I know you've already talked about it. I love when they're describing FUBAR and what it means. That whole back and forth is hilarious.
Oh yeah, it's great.
But as I said, as someone who works in a museum, works along reuniting or getting to tell or record veterans' interviews and stories, something I did in my past is I worked very closely with our B-17 that we have in the museum collection that we fly. The airplane typically would fly around the country and give veterans rides one more time. I saw this morphing in reverse. I would see the old folks come to the airplane, and then they would actually get younger. And I mean, you would literally see it. You'd see a guy come up to the airplane, and he'd be on a walker or on a cane, and suddenly he'd put the cane down or something, and he didn't need it for a few minutes while he was walking around his old bomber, the airplane that he associated during the war with. And so when we first started talking and we said, what minutes do you want? I really did want these minutes just to talk about what I've experienced getting to work with some of the World War II veterans later in life, into their 90s, and even, some of them crossing that 100 year mark. So, but that's kind of my background with the movie. I think it's just such a important movie because I really think, we had this generation of World War II movies like the Longest Day and stuff like that back in the day, and then you had kind of a lull for a while. I mean, there were a few in the 70s, some of them were serious, some of them weren't, but then I feel like you had this big lull in World War II movies, and then suddenly Saving Private Ryan just hit, And it really sparked another generation of people to become interested in World War II, to help tell those stories, preserve them. I really think this movie helped get our World War II memorial built in Washington, D.C. Certainly Tom Hanks and Spielberg were a big part of helping that campaign. So it's a really important movie to watch and to talk about and just truly appreciate.
Oh, wow. So now you based on your story, the question begs to ask, what did your grandfather think of the movie?
My grandfather, so it's really interesting. I saw two movies with my grandparents, both Italian immigrants, different movies in the theater, and both of them were emotionally touched by the movie. My grandfather felt that, you know, the scenes that you see in the movie were just very accurate. The settings all felt real. The big battle at the end, you know, again, my grandfather wasn't like, you know, a GI. I mean, he was a kid fighting a different kind of war. But it all just felt really real to him. He said that's just how it was. The sounds were real. Something he said that always stuck with me is he said after a big battle, we get really quiet. And, you know, and the movie kind of does that after this huge battle. If you notice, it's kind of quiet. I mean, there's some guys running around, stuff like that, but it suddenly kind of quieted down. And it was just little details like that. And the other movie I saw with my grandmother, also an Italian immigrant, was Titanic.
Oh, wow.
And so Titanic hit different, not because of, you know, anything she experienced, obviously, like sinking or anything, but the scenes where they're loading the ship and they're getting ready to launch all reminded her of coming over to this country. And my grandmother actually came over on the Andrea Doria, which later sunk. So, but luckily not with her on it. So it's those two movies of that era I saw with my grandparents, and I'm really glad I experienced that with them to just get, you know, takes from people who were there and saw this kind of thing. Not the exact story, but something adjacent, and they could certainly identify.
Right, exactly. I mean, they can identify. See, part of the whole idea, and this is what I think is really cool about you, you know, from your museum, how you are always in contact with, with the either astronauts or veterans, and you know that you get to in some ways relive things that they actually live based on from their yes. from you know from their stories that they tell you, you know, and I'm sure we could probably talk for hours about all of the different stories that you've been told over the years from all of these people in the past, but you know, just the idea of, you know, passing on information from generation to generation is just amazing. And that fits perfectly in with everything that we're talking about here.
Oh, you're absolutely right. You know, like I said, even though my grandfather wasn't a GI, this movie opened up the floodgates of him wanting to share and me wanting to hear about what life was like as a kid in war-torn Italy. And I'll be honest with you, you know, I didn't know there was an Italian resistance. I mean, I knew about like the French underground and things like that. I didn't know that existed in Italy. I mean, they had an insignia and everything. And this movie was a sort of this bonding moment. And it's really weird. Like we would talk about it and not talk about, you know, how guys do, you can't have too much emotion, you know, but we would, like, hey, remember when we went and saw Saving Private Ryan, and he'd be like, oh yeah, and then that would start the floodgates again, and he would start like, well, this one time, and you know, he talked about an American tank crew coming through and things like that, and it was just one of these little details that none of my other cousins were really, they're not really into history, so I felt like it was this private storytelling I got into my own family history that like nobody else really knows, you know, just because our interests are different places. And the same with my grandmother. I mean, her telling me a story about when they were up on a deck of the Andrea Doria and they crossed through crossed by the Statue of Liberty, that everybody started singing the national anthem up on deck, you know, and you can vision this, you can picture all these, you know, Italian immigrants up on deck singing the national anthem as they sail by the Statue of Liberty. So I know this happened for me, and I have to think that this happened for a ton of other people who had actual World War II, you know, American GIs in their family history that that this opened up the gates of the floodgates of talking to their loved ones and finding out more about what they did in World War II.
Yeah, no, I definitely, I mean, again, I've heard stories of, you know, veterans who walked out of the movie because it was so hard for them to watch it. And I've also heard stories at the same time of veterans who, as you said, opened up because of it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the one thing that I remember a comment, I vividly remember a comment from a veteran I talked to about this movie. And he was saying that just the sounds of the M1 rifles pinging, you know, when they fire their last round, that was so well done and so accurate that he hadn't heard that sound in decades. And then he goes to the movie and there it is. And he said that sound, just one ping, brought back this flood of emotions. I, you know, if you could do that with a movie, that's a success.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that. And I mean, we all know that Steven Spielberg basically hit a home run with this film. There's no question about that.
Absolutely.
You know, I've talked about this many times over the course of this season. You know, as much of a great movie that Shakespeare in Love is, this one is much more memorable.
I can't quote any lines from Shakespeare in Love, but I think Saving Private Ryan got robbed in a few areas there.
Yes.
But
I agree.
But yeah, and not taking anything away from Shakespeare in Love, but this movie, I think the movie we're talking about here, is historically and culturally important. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's a great movie to go and sit down and watch, but it's also something that it's almost like a you know, 2-hour history lesson that you just get to immerse yourself in. And I think that's just a completely different type of movie and one that we hadn't seen many times. Really.
Yeah. Again, it's a known fact that Spielberg did something here that nobody expected him to be able to do. And and we also know that it's changed the way everyone looks at movies. Or looks at war movies.
I agree. It totally set the bar. I mean, so did Band of Brothers. We were just talking. We were talking literally yesterday at work about. And I know we're talking about Band of Brothers.
We can talk as much about Band of Brothers as you want. In a few days, I have an interview with George Luz that I got in touch with through you.
Oh.
So you know, the Band of Brothers is connected here.
You're going to have a great time with George. He is just like his father must have been, which is amazing. But in my eyes, we're talking about, you know, Saving Private Ryan and Band of Brothers, which came out
many years.
In
1998 was Saving Private Ryan, and in 2001 was Band of Brothers.
Yeah, and we still, in my opinion, have not seen a miniseries that quite has hit the mark as Band of Brothers, or a movie about World War II that has hit the same mark as Saving Private Ryan.
I completely agree with you on both of those cases. I mean, as much as I really enjoy both The Pacific and Masters of the Air, they're not Band of Brothers.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and that's what got us. We were talking about this at work yesterday, and I said, you know, Masters of the Air is what we were talking about. And I said, it's fantastic. You know, it's very, very enjoyable, but it's just not Band of Brothers, you know, and I can't put my finger on it. I don't know if it's because there were so many of the guys from Easy Company still alive when they were making that, or I don't know, you know, and the same goes for Saving Private Ryan. I have seen wonderful, you know, war movies that are perfectly great, like Fury and things like that, they're good movies, you know, but they just never approached even the neighborhood of Saving Private Ryan, if that makes sense.
A question also then begs to be asked, you know, is it because this was the first one and therefore it raised the bar so high that no one else has been able to match it? Or is it just that this is just so amazing, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's probably a little bit of both. You know, I think that, like you said, like we're talking about war movies, and last one, you know, I couldn't tell you the last, you know, the war movie before Saving Private Ryan that was a serious approach to a World War II movie. But I mean, geez, you're probably going back to things like The Dirty Dozen or something like that. I mean, which had a totally different, you know, intent. I think it also came at a time where we knew our time with our World War II veterans was short, you know, or at least approaching a time where we needed to start thinking about that. And you know, it gave us time to reflect and try to get those stories and honor our vets while they were still here. And like I said, I have no hesitation with saying that Tom Hanks and Spielberg in this movie helped get the funding for our National World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. This was a huge driving force in that.
I've actually been to that memorial. Very, very cool.
Yeah, it's very, very powerful memorial.
Yeah, definitely agree with you on that. All right, so actually, maybe we should start talking about the movie this minute. Maybe we could. Not that everyone hasn't enjoyed the rest of what we're talking about. That's fine. So this minute begins with the older Ryan crouching down and looking at a gravestone. Now, actually, I'm gonna cut myself off here for a second and go back to something. When you saw this movie, do you remember if you were shocked by the little twist that they did here, where they make you believe from the beginning of the movie that this is the story of Miller and not the story of Ryan?
Oh yeah, I was totally shocked. I thought you were looking at Miller the whole time. And so yes, you could paint me as surprised.
Yeah. No, because what's really
how about yourself? Did you?
I bought into it after the first time, obviously. Obviously, only the first time. After that, it's a little more difficult to buy into it. But yeah, because when Miller gets shot, which obviously we talked about over the last week, the idea was, okay, wait a second, is he? How is that possible that he shot? We saw him at the beginning. What's going on here? I guess he survives his wound. And then we figure it out within a few moments that's not what happened. And I was like, wow, they really duped me on that one. I've had guests that have complained about that, and I've had guests that think that it was done really well. And my personal opinion is that I liked that they did it, because if we would have known from the start that it's not Miller, then our perspective on the whole movie would be very different. We think that Miller's the protagonist, and he's the one telling this whole story and stuff like that. Obviously, there are things that happen here that Ryan couldn't have known. There's no question about that. He doesn't know about the whole trip, for the first 2 hours of the movie till they get to him. But still, the idea is that I like. That we're made to believe that it is Miller, and then fine. So they tricked us. Okay, I don't take it. Yeah. I don't take it too personally.
They absolutely did. And there's two reasons I actually like that they did it. One is because it's a punch in the gut. When you lose Miller. And then it, very quickly after that finds us in the cemetery, looking at his headstone. But that's what wars are. I mean, they are just multiple punches in the gut, and you're losing guys that are just awesome people, that you wish you hadn't lost. So as much as it like hurt, it was also like, oh, this is like authentic. Like you have a feeling of, I lost my buddy, someone I really liked, and that is what happens in war, unfortunately. And two, I like that it's a way of paying for respect to those guys that didn't come home in World War II, showing that, a lot of them gave all for their buddy next door, standing next to them in the line. And as painful as it is, that first time you realize it, and now, of course, we've watched it a bunch and you know who it is. But when I was leaving the theater, I was like, man, like, that was well done, and I'm glad they did it, but this sucks, because you watch somebody you like pass away on screen,
Right. Okay. That is completely fair. I completely, completely understand why you would think that way also. And again, when watching this scene that we're watching right now, this is right after, we're just, a few minutes of knowing that he died, and that was it. So
yeah, and that And I was, you know, and I know they just met him in the movie, so they weren't like old time, you know, companions in the same outfit or anything. But that dedication to one another that those soldiers showed during World War II, and Korea, Vietnam, Gulf Wars, you know, whichever war you want to talk about, there's nothing, there's no bond like it. And I know I'm going off rails here a bit, but I'll tell you this story just to kind of to display that. Is I had a B-17 veteran come out one time, and he said that their B-17 was hit by flak in aircraft fire, and they were going to have to bail out. And he found out that his best friend, who was their radio operator, his parachute had been hit by flak, and he couldn't bail out with it. And the pilot said, you know, everybody, we're going to bail out. And this guy said, I was going to lose my best friend because he couldn't, you know, he couldn't bail. And he said, I was so mad that instead of bailing out, I threw my parachute out the window. And I just said, well, if you're not going to bail, I'm not going to bail either. And yeah. And luckily it had a good outcome. The pilot, was able to find a way to crash land, and they were in friendly territory by the time they came down. But still, I mean, that dedication where you don't know, you're over enemy territory and you threw your parachute out the window because you weren't going to leave your buddy. That's what these guys meant to one another. Wow. In combat.
Now, what did the guy think 50 years later or plus, you know, whether he...
he told me that he said, this is why young people fight wars. So he goes, because the older I got, the more I was like, what was I thinking? You know, so... But you know, when you're 20 years old and you're fighting with your buddy next door, that was all that mattered. And but he was glad he did it. They were friends till the end. So that's a pretty bold move.
Wow. And it's a lot of confidence. Also, the fact that he knew that he was going to be able to try and find a way for both of them to survive.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
That is a great story. Thank you very much for sharing that. You see, that's why I love talking to you. I get all these great stories. Why not?
It's my honor. I've taken on a promise to these vets that have shared their stories that we keep them going and we continue to try to do that.
One, so, or only people will be able to hear them on my podcast or your podcast.
No. So we have written them down. I actually did a book. The Final Mission. Me and Hal Bryan did a book together, so you can, that's my plug, you can go find it on Amazon. We did it, all the proceeds go to RB-17 to help keep it going. But it was really an honor. I did about 7 years putting veterans back on the B-17, the B-25 as well. We fly the B-17's down for repairs, the B-25 is flying. And I was already a World War II fan and a military history fan, and historian, but, getting to work literally, you know, right in front of these people with their aircraft, getting them a chance to fly again, showing them and their kids, which was really special. This is where your grandpa sat. I mean, getting to show families that, was just a high point in my career. It'll be hard to
talk. I understand that. I mean, I know that you're also a fan of the best years of our lives. I mean, that's something that came out right after the war, and they still were able to do that same thing that you just told us right now about, you know, a guy looking back at his old office, you know, as it's referred to there. And it's like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, the memories, both good and bad.
I experienced that very thing. Yeah, that whole, you know, the end of that movie where Dana Andrews climbs up in the nose of the B-17, and, you know, he's just kind of transported back to, World War II on a bombing run. I've actually seen it. I've seen that exact thing in different crew positions of our airplane. And you just kind of get very quiet, and you give them space, and you let them take all the time that they need. But that movie, I really give them props for being so brave to tell that story so close to the end of the war. It's incredible.
Wow. Very cool. Okay, so basically we have old Ryan here, and he starts mumbling to the grave, and he goes, "My family's with me today. They wanted to come with me. To be honest with you, I wasn't sure how I'd feel about coming back here. Every day I think about what you said to me that day on the bridge, and I've tried to live my life the best I could. I hope that was enough. I hope that, at least in your eyes, I've earned what all of you have done for me." Now, I mean, first of all, this is a great monologue. You know, it really does bring together the whole story of the movie. But what's great is that the way that the shot is framed, so he's on the right side of the screen, and on the left side of the screen you see his family standing by, and, you know, looking out at him. So, you know, as we've mentioned before, it's basically, our assumption is it's his wife, his son or daughter, and then son-in-law or daughter-in-law, and then three teenage girls and a young boy. The boy is completely restless the whole time. You see him running around his father, you know, not standing in one place the whole time. But everyone else is just, it's as if they're giving, you know, older Ryan the time to pay his respects here. But on the other hand, we don't know what he's told his family.
Yeah, so clearly he's never told them the name, right, because right, she didn't right. know exactly. his mm-hmm. you know, his name. One of the things as I was preparing for this that I had never noticed, I'm glad you mentioned the family in the background, is one of the daughters actually becomes emotional and has to like lean on her husband, I think, or it's one of the daughters that's leaning on her parent, but I had never noticed that before. But one of the kids gets really emotional.
She hugs her grandmother. That's what it is.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. Yeah, I knew it was something like that.
Granddaughters basically goes and hugs the grandmother at that time.
Yeah. I mean that. See, what I've experienced with a lot of the World War II veterans is their families have known nothing about what they did, other than high level. Like, yep, I was in a B-17 during the war, or I was in a tank, you know, during the war, and they left it at that. There's no stories. I mean, there's exceptions to everything, you know, but I would say probably about 80% of the veterans who, you know, we've interacted with in our museum have not told their families in great detail any of the stories of combat or the hard times, you know, and maybe they would share with them a couple funny stories and then kept it very high level. You know, and just, you know, to that extreme, I have a very good friend of mine who, through a weird twist of fate, it turned out her dad flew the Huey, a Vietnam helicopter that's in our museum. And I've been friends. Yeah, I mean, it's a weird twist of fate. I've been friends with her since junior high, and we didn't get this aircraft until 2021. And it was just through dumb luck. And why I'm telling you that is because her dad, who I knew him as well, and he knew I was into aviation, never talked anything about this, but never even told his family he flew in Vietnam.
What did they think he did?
They knew he had been in the army. Knew he was in the army, knew that he was in Vietnam, and he left it at that. And it wasn't until he passed. Like, he never told them. He passed away to cancer, and they kind of went through, you know, getting his affairs in order, and they found he had hidden his photo album and his logbook and his helmet. He had it all hidden at his hunting cabin. There was all of his memorabilia from flying Hueys in Vietnam. And then through his logbook, we were able to find out that he flew our tail number in Vietnam and Soc Trang. So,
wow.
But that, you know, to that point that there are veterans who they didn't even tell, like he didn't even tell them what he did. You know, I mean, it's, I know Vietnam's a lot different, but World War II, you know, a lot of those guys, did the same. I mean, I had a family friend whose dad was a mailman after the war and never talked about what he did. And the guy was a Doolittle Raider. You know, it actually went on the raid and bombed Tokyo. Never told anybody, you know, until, you know, well into his like 80s when he finally was like, yeah, I was on the Doolittle raid and started going to the reunions. So
that's just mind blowing. You know, it makes you wonder what, you know, the emotions and all of the horrors that these men had to, had they kept in. you know, for so many years.
Yeah.
I mean, I, you know, and the contrast with what we've heard about the guys from Easy Company, how, you know, they knew that they couldn't talk to their families, but they still got together and they still talked it out themselves.
Yeah. And I wish that every unit had the reunions that like Easy Company had. You know, a lot of the units just didn't do reunions. I think that would have helped, you know, because at least once a year they'd have this relief valve that they could just go and blow off steam and talk to people who can talk the language. And that's what a lot of it is.
Correct.
They want to talk to someone
who understands,
who they don't have to see at Thanksgiving dinner.
Exactly.
You know, that won't judge them for what they want to say or talk about. And, you know, I know I keep shifting wars and I apologize, but with our
Huey,
yeah. Well, with our Huey, we had a good friend of mine whose father was in Vietnam, and she said he won't tell us anything about it, but would you be willing to talk with him? And I said, yeah. And she said, you know, I don't know if he'll talk to you or not. We'll find out. And I was surprised that he took the invite to come out and even walk around the Huey and chat with me. We ended up sitting on a bench next to the Huey and talking for 2 hours.
Wow.
And my friend knew that like it was going to start at noon or something like that. It's whenever our appointment was. And I called her at like 2:15 and I just said, you know, your dad just left. And she goes, what do you mean? Didn't he get there at noon? And I said, well, yeah. And we just sat there and we talked about his time in Vietnam, and he got emotional. And he actually told me, he says, this is the most I've ever told anybody about what I did in Vietnam and about coming home and everything else. But he just needed that relief valve that wasn't his family. You know, he didn't want to talk with his daughters about this stuff or someone like that. You know, to be honest, I was a nobody. I was a blank face that
You're
understood the
nobody,
language.
Chris.
You know, I'm not someone he has to see at the holidays,
right.
You know, yeah. And he can pick and choose when he wants to see me. And then I also understand the language. You know, I could talk about throwing Wilson Pickett out or something, which was like a phosphorus smoke marker and things like that. And, you know, so when he saw that I understood some of the battlefield phraseology.
Aren't they called Wiley Pete?
It's not. Yeah. Wilson Pickett, Willie Pete. They had a bunch of nicknames for it in the theater. It was just a safety. It was somebody he could vent to and then be like, okay, see you later. And to be honest, he's never talked to me again. You know, he said hi and stuff like that, but that's it, you know, and that's okay. I was that person for that day when he needed it and, you know, mission accomplished. But circling back full circle to all this, these guys did not a lot of times ever tell their families, especially the dark days, you know, the bad days, the hard ones. And this, I couldn't imagine if I was Private Ryan, I couldn't imagine trying to tell my family about a group of guys that spearheaded across Europe to send me home because of a very dark time in our family when all of my brothers were lost. And then, by the way, most of the guys that came to save me were lost as well.
Right.
I could. That'd be a hard story to try to tell my family.
True, but you look at it from the perspective. I mean, again, at the very end of this minute, the wife, you know, stands next to him and she goes, James. And then you see her reading the name on the grave, and you hear she says Captain John H. Miller. And you know, you think that, you know, again, let's say this is taking place in 1997, okay, a year before the movie came out. All right. So we're still talking 53 years after the events happened. You know, so let's say he's been married for 50 years to this woman and he didn't tell her anything. He didn't even mention to her, you know, or let's even change the scenario. We're going to Normandy. Okay. What
right.
happened for them to, I mean, he says in this minute that my family is with me because they wanted to come with me, which means that he himself wanted to come. You know, it was on his own volition. It's not that, hey, Grandpa, we've gotten you, we've made a we decided we're gonna, you know, fly you to, you know, to Normandy to be able to, for whatever, because we know that you were in World War II. It sounds as if it's something that's coming from him. And
yeah,
because of the way that he does that, it's just very, it's very strange that she, you know, that, that she knows absolutely nothing. You know, that he wouldn't have mentioned Miller is the guy who helped save me. I mean, they must know that he had three brothers who were killed in World War II. You know, it's not as if he probably always said, yeah, I'm an only child, you know, as opposed to, you know, I had three brothers, but unfortunately they were all lost, you know, in, you know, in during World War II, which is something that, that, that makes a little more sense. So again, we'll never know the true answer to this, but it's just very, it's sure. very strange that he didn't even, you know, she doesn't even have a little bit of an inkling about what it is. She's yeah, never heard it, his name before. Who the hell is John H. Miller? You know, that's it.
Yeah, yeah, it, yeah, I totally respect that, that point of view. I think I've just seen so many veterans hide different aspects of so much of their service that I get it. Like, I'm like, yep, that sold me right away.
No, I, that, that I agree that, with that, you on, but again, if he's making the journey to Normandy, they have to know something.
Yeah.
There must be some information about that. I mean, you're, again, it, with all due respect to the stories that you've just told us, you know, these are people that have kept it in, and they opened up when they were in a situation where they could open up, whether the guy was sitting next to the Huey or next to the bomber or whatever it is. But here, you know,
this
is that time, but this is not, no offense, this is not him going to a museum. This is him going on a trip with his entire family to a place where apparently he fought. You know, again, we don't know what they know, but they know that he was there during during World War II. Again, it doesn't matter whether it's D-Day or not or anything like that. So they have to know something. And for her to be completely shocked here and say, who... basically saying, who the hell is John Miller? Yeah. He's,
right,
he's going to have a very interesting tale to tell his family that night.
So I'm so glad you said that, because I've always wished that there would have been like a I don't even know how you would do this. It wouldn't make any sense. But I always wish there was like a mini extra somewhere or deleted scene of him at a restaurant that night telling them the story and like their reaction to all of it or something. I'd always hoped that, like, you know, because I had seen some veterans do that, and there was part of me that's always like, I wish that was a thing, and I know that it can't be and it's not enough for a whole movie or something, but I always assumed in my head after the movie ends, I'm like, they went out to dinner that night, and at the hotel lobby he tells them all this story, and you're seeing the story that he's going to tell them. Whether or not that was ever intended, applied, or anything, I think that's just my imagination. But I always do kind of build that up.
Right. It's just, well,
how do you, you know, the other thing is, how do you tell that story, you know, and do it justice with what we just saw? Well, I mean, it almost feels like words.
You know, I know this guy named Steven Spielberg who just put out a movie about the story. Let's go watch it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's my explanation. My explanation, always watch a movie. You know, there you go. That's the answer to everything.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I love it.
Right. And that's how this minute ends. So is there anything else you wanted to mention about this particular minute?
No, I think we hit it pretty good. And then thank you for allowing me to kind of go all over the map. But it's something I'm really passionate about. I really love, hopefully.
I love your passion.
Giving
for it,
those
Chris.
Veterans.
Trust me.
thank you. I hope that, you know, we're there to support our vets when they need them and when they didn't need us, because they sure did a lot for us when we needed them. So happy to do it. The one thing I would encourage everybody at the end of these minutes is wherever you are, go get involved in your local museum and volunteer. I guarantee you your life will be forever changed once you start. If you're ever on the fence about doing it, go do it wherever you are. Because that museum could use your help, and I guarantee you it'll be very rewarding for you.
Totally agree. Totally agree. So every Wednesday, we have a segment called World War II Wednesday, where my guest will give their top five World War II related movies. So I'm sure this will not be easy for you, but you know, you weren't invited here for this to just be completely simple, is it?
No. You made it hard on me the last time with a similar thing, but I love it. I enjoyed it.
So why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
So number five for me, I think, would be the 1990 Memphis Belle with B-17 crew. It's kind of a nod to the 1943 documentary done by William Wyler. This one was done by Catherine Wyler. So that's my number.
I actually got to say that I'm very shocked that it's so low on your list. But okay, that's fine. Yeah,
well, it's a good company.
I expected it to be higher for you, but that's okay. You know, because I had one. You're the third guest to use it. One of my guests, actually, who is also a historian, put it as number five. Number one, sorry.
Yeah. Oh, it does. It could be in any of that. I mean, there's just so many good ones that I'm passionate about. To narrow it down to just five.
Chris, don't take me wrong. I'm not believing it. Just, I know you're a. You know.
Oh yeah.
I'm a B-17 nut. That's the whole thing. It's not a question of the movie or anything. It's just a question of my thoughts of Chris Henry and B-17s. Yep. So I figured that it would be much higher. But okay. I mean, hey, wasn't even on Hal's list. So, you know.
No worries. let's see. Number four. I have now. Are we allowed to do miniseries, or is it going to be strictly
I'll let it slide. It's fine. You can do miniseries because I know that there's three that are going to come up here.
Yeah, exactly. So the next one is Masters of the Air for me. Really loved it. I thought it was well done, especially when you consider that they didn't have a single real B-17 in it. You totally forget that they did amazing work. And again, it's honoring a group of men and the more in depth than like a single movie was allowed to do or could do. So I totally love that. So that's my number.
I got to see that again. I saw it when it came out last year, and I've been meaning to rewatch it. I got to rewatch it.
Yeah, absolutely. So my number three is a movie called 30 Seconds Over Tokyo. I love the movie about the Doolittle Raid. There's so many fun facts about that movie. Spencer Tracy only would say lines that were exact quotes from Jimmy Doolittle. It was in his contract. Yeah, it was really wild. Like, he was very specific that he wanted to only quote the real Jimmy Doolittle, which I thought was pretty wild, which he did. I mean, it's a very accurate movie. And then when you consider that it came out in like 44 or 45, so close to the raid, it's remarkable. So that's my number three. My number two, it was a tie between, to be honest, Saving Private Ryan and 12 O'Clock High. I love them so dearly, and I'll tell you why they're a tie for two, is because number one is Band of Brothers, and so that is my top five picks right there.
Okay, all right, I'll let it slide.
There's so many. Now you see why Memphis Belle is five. Not a great movie, but when you're jam packing so many cool ones in there, it's tough.
Correct. Yeah, no, obviously this isn't easy. I know that.
Yeah, that's a good quiz you got there.
Yeah. All right, excellent. So, Chris, would you like to tell people where they can find you?
Absolutely. I've helped out on a lot of the different minutes, Apollo 13 minute. I've been guests on a few different minutes with Rob, like the Die Hard minute, of course, this Apollo 13 minute as well with Jim O'Kane. But my day-to-day is I am the manager of the EAA Aviation Museum out in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. So if you are ever out this way, please come out to the museum. We have artifacts from World War One and pre-war all the way through current conflict. Aircraft, things that have gone to the moon on Apollo 8, things that have gone into the shuttle program with Joe Engel. So, you know, please come out. No matter what your interest is in aviation, science, or history, you know, we'd love to have you out there. And if you're there, come say hi. You know, shoot me a note that you're coming or something. I'd love to say hi to you.
Excellent. All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, MovieRobMinute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to MovieRobMinute@MovieRob.net. So until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn this. In my solitude, you